Thank you very much. I want to thank Jimmy and Joan for putting on this series year after year after year. It's always a pleasure. I'm going to read a group of poems tonight about place. I'm going to start with one by Dorothy Holly. A whole quart jar. We seldom went to the store in the 20s and 30s on our farm in Ohio. Holstein cows provided milk, Leghorn chickens, eggs, and meat. With the sun still in them, we ate fresh from the garden or canned for winter's use, peas, tomatoes, beans, and corn. Hands, both small and large, seeded ripened cherries. My mother, when I was 4, took the ones I seeded and filled a whole quart jar. Can I bring this a little closer? Here we go. Is that okay? I want to read one from my first book of poetry, The Duration of Grief. And this one has a character in it, John Wesley Powell, who was a Civil War veteran and who had lost an arm in the Civil War. And he was the first person to explore the Grand Canyon. So this poem is called Grand Canyon. In 1869, a war hero with one arm explored the length of Green River, its water clear from Wyoming until it met the silty Colorado. Too thick to drink, too thin to plow, his party said. John Wesley Powell believed river had cut canyon as volcanic pressure thrust the plateau up. My father was right. The Grand Canyon was extreme erosion. A boy, he hiked to the bottom. On the way out, carried rocks in his wood and canvas backpack, 80 pounds worth. Made a diagram in his journal of geologic history he'd carried. Later, he wrote of soil, wind and water and lichen on rock, eons of wear and tear, held to the earth by vegetation. Grazing clipped away plants, rains mined away soil, dumping mud and rocks in streams and valleys and towns below. He grieved the tragedy, hubris of herders who thought that land was free. I live at the edge of the Grand Canyon. It's night. I know the hole is there. At midnight, I feel a darker blackness carved away by the river that empties at last into the Gulf. I know that kind hands would reach out to guide me back from the edge if they knew where I am, alone with the smell of ponderosa pine and the hauntings of nocturnal creatures. I don't want to explore this hole. I don't want to be here alone with the echo of the one-armed man and the memory of my father lugging rocks up from the bottom. It is magnificent by day in the clear air, but to know this void, I have to go to the bottom, touch the river that flows to the Gulf. This one is called At the Edge of China. Going steep down Negley Hill this morning, my titanium and plastic knees quivering as if they were the original bone and cartilage, defying gravity, Third Presbyterian anchoring the bottom, blackened stone and Gothic spires towering over traffic. I thought how 20 years ago we trained for the Himalayas by climbing Negley Hill, sweating our muscles into shape. Then we were on Longtong Himmel with our daughter and her Nepali boyfriend in a dim stone hut where we drank smoky tea and heard on the landlord's little plastic radio that the Intermediate Range Missile Treaty had been ratified by the U.S. Senate. We were at that moment sitting at the edge of China. As we gasped thin air at 14,000 feet, lagging along on a trail that ran straight up, two tiny Sherpa women passed us in their colorful striped wool aprons, each carrying 100 pounds of rice on her back by a forehead tump line, walking easily, barefoot, knitting, and chatting. And we, speechless, breathless, looked out on snowy peaks, on meadows, a yak milk cheese factory, our bones deep aching. And here's another place. The Half Dome, Yosemite, 1962. Teacher soft muscles put to the test, we traversed the forest path, then climbed the granite hunchback. From the top, drunk on grandeur, he climbed down the bare rock, and I, using my arms to hang on steel cables, heels groping for cross pieces like ladder rungs, to keep my trembling legs from buckling, came after him. He gazed out from splendor to splendor so as not to see his bride of one short week plummet to untimely death. I thought he loved scenery better than me. We went back down the forest path after dark, found where to spread our sleeping bags, zipped together as one, put clothes and shoes under the canvas flaps to serve as pillows, slept our aches and pains away under a sky crowded with June stars. And when we woke, found we had slid downhill where we had camped unknowing in the hairpin of a trafficked road. And there uphill, amidst the bustle of other campers scurrying up their breakfasts, were paltry piles of our clothes. Nothing for it but to caterpillar up that hill naked in our joint sleeping bag, the beginning of our life together. We'd come from Cornwall, is the title here, and also the beginning of the sentence. We'd come from Cornwall, where my ancestors lied buried, to the mouth of the Dart in Devon, through quiet green fields, down roads so narrow we could hear the scrape of hedgerow against bus. Bells of ancient churches, St. Clement, St. Petrox, St. Saviour, rang a clangor we felt on our skins, a din that silenced the birds. We searched for my husband's Dartmouth forebears, wandered in graveyards, scoured records in the bright new library's microfiche, found tales of wars, Norse raiders, crusaders, Norman invasion, the invasion of Utah Beach, and found we're related by prayer book rebellion when holdouts from Devon and Cornwall refused the English king's allegiance to himself, 5,500 crushed to blood and broken bone. But now the waterfront sparkles, white caps, sailboats, gulls, swans, fish and chips. And I want to end with another poem about place. This one has an epigraph from John Muir. When one tugs at a single thing in nature, he finds it attached to the rest of the world. And the title of the poem is Taking. Great-grandfather Charles Thomas from Mind Out Cornwall joined the gold rush, dug Grass Valley gold from underground tailings, dug gold from underground tailings dumped downriver onto farmland. Miners dug up 12 billion tons of soil, injected mercury to flush out gold, toxins in rivers, lakes, trees uprooted, floods. California natives were in the way, infected with foreign pathogens, murdered, 100,000 killed, children taken from parents, just one of the costs of get rich quick. By the time gold fever had died down, streams and rivers were dammed, drained, poisoned. Charles Thomas's grandson, my father, wrote how overgrazing the Wasatch Plateau of south central Utah caused floods of mud and rock in valley towns. It had been free for freeloading herders to run sheep and cattle along the top, grazing between railheads, nipping off grasses and forbs that held soil to steep slopes. Without vegetation to absorb snowmelt into hillsides, flooding followed. Farmers, townsfolk down in the valley begged the federal government for help. Herders objected. If they couldn't use the land for free, what was free enterprise? Now, gas companies want what's under my city, my house, my backyard garden, in which my daughter's ashes lie buried under Lenten roses. Marcellus shale, deep beneath us, full of natural gas, that's been there since before first mammals walked the earth. Wild to profit companies, another gold rush, more herds free grazing the Wasatch, dollar signs worming greedy brains. Rupturing Devonian rock, pouring chemicals in to force gas up and out, rummaging in Earth's great womb, flushing out the time when forests and amphibians first appeared, when fish became abundant, as the plates under everything shift, capsize, collide. Thank you. And I'm very ably followed by Fred Peterson.